Court's ready to hear argument in State v. Brower. Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
It's hard to get used to you sitting on that side of the room.
Not nearly as hard as it is for me.
Thank you. May it please the Court, Justice Holland, Justice Jacobs, Justice Ridgely, good morning. I'm Paul Wallace. I'm here on behalf of the State of Delaware, the appellant in this matter. And we are here because of what was a very tragic situation on November 11th of 2006, where two men decided to drag race on Elkton Road in Newark, one of them being the appellee in this case, Jason Brower. When they did so, they paid no attention to who was on the road that Saturday morning, and unfortunately, a lady by the name of Chinsu Park Un came from a side street on Elkton Road and was struck and killed by Monica. Mr. Brower had seen her first and actually hit his brakes and tried to stop before he got to her. Mr. Monaco did not. Brower went to trial. Monaco pled guilty to manslaughter. Brower went to trial on manslaughter also. And when he was tried, during the prayer conference, the state asked for a lesser instruction on criminally negligent homicide. I see my clock just went on. I don't think I'm going to take my whole 20 minutes anyway. The state asked for criminally negligent homicide. Brower asked for nothing. Brower wanted to exercise his rights, as this court has said the parties do have a right, to go all or nothing.
Was there an objection by Brower to the lesser requested by the state?
Yes, there was. In fact, he not only objected at trial, he objected in post-verdict motions, and in fact, that's what brought about the sua sponte ruling by the Superior Court in this case. He consistently said the state hadn't raised sufficient evidence to hold me liable at all, certainly not for criminally negligent homicide. It turns out that the lesser included offense that the state had asked for, criminally negligent homicide, was the one for which he was convicted. And he raised post-trial motions about that, consistently saying the state had not proven its case beyond a reasonable doubt.
Your point is that this was a strategic decision not
yes.
to ask for that lesser included offense instruction.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that, you know, because Delaware honors that.
Yes.
That's the end of the case as far as you're concerned.
As far as the state is concerned, it is, Your Honor. And I believe that when you read the appellee's answering brief, he agrees. He says, yes, that was the strategy I employed, but believes that this court needs to give some further guidance. The state suggests there's no further guidance need be given. The lesser included instructions work exactly as they are supposed to under Delaware law. We are a party autonomy state. Under Chow and Cox, both sides said, this is a strategy we wish to employ. The state said, we can see where there may be some difference between these two. We have a defendant who has already pled guilty to manslaughter. He was the striking vehicle. We now have the non-striking vehicle, but his initiation of this certainly could be viewed as criminally negligent as opposed to reckless, depending on how the jury views the evidence. And the defendant's defense himself was, I wasn't speeding at all. I wasn't speeding. I wasn't drag racing at all. And the defendant said, you haven't proven your case. That ended it, as the state would suggest. We believe that where the Superior Court went wrong in the post-verdict motions is the court read too much into Lilly and didn't really coordinate those findings or didn't do so with the Chow and the Cox decision. And I believe that perhaps the one passage in Cox discusses the Walker versus United States case, in which the court says that a court should only give lesser included offenses after closing arguments in extreme circumstances, wasn't speaking about whether or not the court should ever just sua sponte jump into that strategic decision making by both parties, but instead as to timing under Rule 30. And I believe that's where things went wrong in this particular case. The state suggests that this is really a rather simple matter. This jury was
condition that a trial judge can never sua sponte give a lesser included offense instruction.
I believe that given our case law the way it is and the fact that this is a party autonomy state, that under circumstances like this, where both parties have clearly made their positions known and have knowingly engaged strategy as they did, no, the Superior Court never should. Because what happens then, if it had, let's say for a moment that the judge, the Superior Court judge in this case, did give either the vehicular homicide or operation of motor vehicle causing death, if those are even applicable, and that's a whole separate question the state raised, but let's say it was, and let's say the court did. Now, the state has asked for criminally negligent homicide, the defense has asked for nothing, and the court has imposed vehicular homicide second degree. I guarantee you our tables would be switched right now, because what would happen is then Brower would be claiming, wait, we're a party autonomy state. I wanted to limit my exposure by not having any lesser included. I understand the state has a right to one, but I wanted to limit my my criminal exposure, and the court actually expanded it. I made a knowing choice. I made a strategic choice, and so did the state. And yet the court then really went against the case law that this court has laid down. So I would suggest, Your Honor, respectfully, yes, in these circumstances, the Superior Court simply should never jump to it. The court did everything right. It had the prayer conference. It asked what the lesser includeds were. If any of the steps had been missed, maybe there might be a little more room to argue this. But the court did everything right here, and the parties did everything right. The problem is that Brower didn't like the result. And then when he got granted relief by the Superior Court, certainly at first he was holding on to it with dear life because it would get him a new trial.
So what's your understanding of why the Superior Court decided it should have included these other lesser included offenses?
I believe that the court read too much into Lilly. When it read Lilly, it did not put the overlay of Chau and Cox, and I believe it read too much into the Cox decision in the one portion where Cox discusses Walker versus United States, and instead saw that as a statement that, in fact, the court should give the instruction itself, as opposed to the timing, which is when we look at where that quote comes from Walker versus United States, it's very clear that it's talking about Rule 30. And there's good reason that citation is in Delaware case law, because our Rule 30 is the same. It's instructing trial judges that you shouldn't, after closing arguments, then spring lesser includeds on the parties, and that certainly makes sense because they don't have the ability to argue against them. They may have already had a strategy, and once their arguments are done, they can't then get up and, if you're the defense, argue for them or the state argue against them. I believe that's where things went wrong in this particular circumstance, Your Honor.
Well, what about the language in Lilly that obligates the trial court to instruct the jury?
I suggest that obligation only comes if the defense has asked for it. The obligation, you have to look at Lilly in the circumstances in which it arose, and that is that Lilly had asked for that instruction. Lilly had asked for vehicular homicide, and the court denied it. And what the court really in Lilly was saying was, if they ask for it, then they get it, because it is a lesser-included offense of manslaughter. And we don't disagree that criminally negligent homicide and vehicular homicide can be lesser-included offenses of manslaughter. Now, we do disagree whether you get both of them, and Lilly doesn't clarify that at all. But I think that if...
So as I understand your summary of where we are with the law in Delaware, if both sides decide it's all or nothing as charged, there are no lesser-included offenses. If either side decides it wants a lesser-included offense, it's entitled to that instruction as a matter of law if it's supported by the evidence.
Yes.
And in this particular case, the defendant wanted no lesser-included offenses. The state asserted its right to ask for a lesser-included offense that was supported by the evidence, and that was given. But beyond that, the Superior Court should have gone no further.
Yes. The state suggests that's where the state of the law is, and I suggest respectfully that it's pretty clear. If there are no other questions from the court, I have no further argument at this point. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Justice Jacobs, Justice Holland, Justice Ridgely, Jim Haley for Appellee Jason Brower. Your Honors, I would submit to you that in this court's precedent, lesser included offense precedent, there is some language that suggests the trial judge here that he did have some measure of discretion. In particular, the language I would direct the court's attention to, for example, in Cox, is the effect of the better view is that the trial court ordinarily should not give a jury instruction on an uncharged lesser included offense when not a side requests or affirmatively agrees to such instruction. So the verb is should not, not may not, as Justice Ridgely asked a moment ago of my opponent. Likewise, in Perkins, we declared the trial court ordinarily should not give a jury instruction. So the language is it should not, not may not, from this court. I know the court has made clear that this is a party autonomy jurisdiction, and
well, how do you reconcile those? That then, if we're a party autonomy, then you never can give a lesser included offense unless it's requested.
In a strict party autonomy jurisdiction, Your Honor, that would I would agree that that's certainly the import of a party autonomy approach.
Well, in this case, the Superior Court seems to be saying post-trial, as a matter of law, I, the trial judge, erred by not sua sponte giving these additional instructions.
Yes.
What legal authority supports that assertion, that as a matter of law, the trial judge should have done that?
There's no law that the trial judge was obligated to do that sua sponte or should have conducted such a review sua sponte. The question I submit to you that the trial judge was reflecting on is that is there some measure of discretion left to me is what the judge I think was asking himself, and he believed from the decisions that perhaps the language I pointed to about should instead of should not give instead of may not give that there was some measure of discretion left to him. He refers in his decision on re-argument, denying re-argument, that he felt a duty to make sure that once the instruction is requested for a lesser included offense that he has a role in ensuring, quote-unquote, a fair trial.
Well, Mr. Haley, if that's your position, then is there any basis for us to reverse? That is, Justice Holland suggested that unless there was a legal basis for the trial court to determine post-verdict, that as a matter of law, he should have sua sponte given a lesser-included offense instruction. Then there's no we have no recourse but to affirm. Your argument seems to be yes, there is no law that required the trial judge to do that, but the trial judge did have discretion.
Yes, sure.
But aren't we beyond that?
I'm sorry, if you could restate your point again, Ron, I missed that.
Is your argument that the court as a matter of law was required to do what it did, or
no,
as a matter of discretion could do what it did?
As a matter of discretion, that even though this court has used the words party autonomy to describe our...
The answer is as a matter of discretion?
As a matter of discretion, yes, Your Honor.
And isn't the standard of review in this case that there has to be an error of law?
The state is certainly... submitting that it was an error of law committed by the trial judge here. Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, if I missed the point, but if I could pick up, I guess, on that then. I think the question is there any measure of discretion left to a trial judge? And if the answer to that question is no, then the state is correct that trial judge erred. If the answer to that question is yes, there is some measure of discretion given the language of this Cox and so forth and Perkins, then...
Well, if there is a measure of discretion,
yes,
then how does that jibe, how does that square with the party autonomy rule?
I've thought about that a good bit on the way down, obviously. It would seem to almost make us a hybrid jurisdiction to some degree. The hybrid jurisdictions were the in between the party autonomy and trial integrity approach that the court described in Cox, and I would agree that if there is some measure of discretion, then it does seem to carve away from the party autonomy approach and leave us in a bit of a hybrid to some degree. And what the bounds of that discretion are, I cannot describe to this court because it's not really specified in our precedent what the bounds of that discretion would be.
Well, if your position is that there is discretion, notwithstanding the party autonomy rule,
yes, Your Honor,
then you should be prepared to tell us what the bounds of that discretion are, since we're going to have to instruct the bar were we to rule your way.
Yes, Your Honor. And the best bounds I can describe are the ones referred to, if I, Colonel May and Judge Carpenter's trial judge's decision on re-argument, Your Honor, in which he says at page 3 of that decision that he has an obligation, the court trial judge has an obligation to ensure that fair and balanced instructions will be given to the jury so that all reasonable outcomes can be considered.
And that's even when both sides have tried the case on a more narrow theory.
Your Honor, I would acknowledge that's in conflict with what how we see the trial judges function generally through these decisions that precede today's, but
well, the language,
I would suggest that that would be appropriate, Your Honor, yes.
The language that you just read.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is the context of that fairly read that notwithstanding the party autonomy rule, the court can dispense with that rule as a matter of discretion, or is the discussion there of discretion in some different context? That is, does the Cox and or Perkins squarely stand for what you're arguing here?
This court has never developed any kind of discretion in the trial judge as far as lesser included offenses go post-Cox that I can see, Your Honor. So this would seem to be somewhat speculative by this trial judge. He does not refer to any precedent himself in giving this description of his discretion. So he refers essentially to his interest in ensuring a fair trial. And that broad interest is what seems to motivate the judge's decision here.
What I hear you saying is, and tell me if I've, I'm wrong in this, is that there is no existing Delaware authority that supports your client's position, but that we ought to essentially change the rule. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why?
Your Honor, I would submit that the judge, trial judge, refers in his opinion to some a detachment that a trial judge has overseeing this contest between these warring parties that are before him, the adversaries, and that in the heat of that contest, that the parties may take approaches that, although perhaps it is in their narrow self-interest to decide upon, in some way don't comport with some broader sense of justice of what a fair trial should consist of, a measured analysis of all reasonable outcomes, as the trial judge suggests, and that this court should think about whether that as a policy matter is an appropriate consideration for Delaware trial courts to have, Your Honor.
But how is the trial judge in a better position to determine what is a fair and just outcome than the trial lawyers, assuming that the lawyers are both, relatively speaking, of equal competence in representing their client?
I would agree he's not in a position of superior knowledge. That's for sure. The parties should have superior knowledge of their own interests. I would agree with that, Your Honor. And it doesn't appear that the judge wants to secure a particular outcome. He's not going that far. He's suggesting that the range of outcomes is what should be available to a judge or a jury in doing justice, and that's a different policy than this court has adopted in the past. I acknowledge that. And something I would submit is worthy of some reflection, Ron. I can't I guess, be more specific than that, because the trial judge is no more specific than that. And I think that was the interest that he was reaching for, that he was more than just a referee calling fouls, that he was wanting to see the jury do justice in some broader sense, Your Honors.
Is there anything to preclude a trial judge from saying to defense counsel at the prayer conference, defense counsel, you're not requesting any lesser included offenses? I think it is either borders on or is ineffective assistance of counsel for you not to do so.
I think that's a fair matter for a trial judge to put to counsel.
So he can, and he or she can jawbone defense counsel into making a lesser included offense instruction,
well,
request?
He should, I believe, or he or she should require counsel to have discussed that with his client, and to be able to report the client's position on that. That's not the, I don't see it as the trial lawyer's decision. It's a, I would submit, the party's decision. And he should require a good, to avoid that kind of claim, what the party's choice is, not what the counsel's choice
so
is.
So if the defense counsel does that with his client, and the client comes back and says he doesn't want a lesser included offense, that the trial judge can still give that instruction?
And I recognize that would upend our precedent on party autonomy, Your Honor. But I would ask the court to reflect on that, Your Honor, yes. I can't say anything more than that, because it's at odds with our precedent and our approach in this jurisdiction.
All right.
Your Honor, if I may, before I sit down, assuming this court were to remand because it finds error, perhaps, I excerpted in my answering brief trial judge's reflection about the instructions. And I would submit to you that that reflection, as excerpted on pages 10 and 11 of my answering brief, suggests that the trial judge was disturbed by the instructions about what it adequately communicated about Brower's intent. Mr. Wallace started his remarks to this court with the point, two men decided to drag race.
I'm not sure where you're going
sure.
with this.
My second argument, Your Honor.
Which is?
Which is the effect that if this matter were remanded, that,
that
this
what?
Court should...
That we should do what?
Should instruct the trial, or should instruct the trial judge to review the adequacy of the instructions, given that he's found an inadequacy. He's tried to cure that by saying there should have been a lesser-included offense given that was that I failed to give. But if that's not a proper
well,
solution
if we affirm... That is, if we rule your way,
yes,
that's an argument that can be made to the trial judge. Why do we need to instruct the trial judge to do anything?
I'm not going to say don't need to, obviously, Your Honor.
I mean, what is there to instruct?
Is that issue even before us, the substance of the
instruction?
No, it's not, Your Honor. Then
why are you arguing it?
I will not, Your Honor. That's all I have, unless the court has any more questions for me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Sorry. I'll be very brief. I just wanted to address the problem if the court steps away from Cox and Chau and party autonomy. And I think the court looked at that in Cox itself and noted the significant conflict in hybrid jurisdictions concerning the scope and application of such discretion, and it's something that was discussed with Appellee's counsel. What it will do is give, particularly the defendant, the ability to sit on his rights and then complain later. Hope that the court simply begins to, for lack of a better term, interfere in his strategy that, such that he can complain. I didn't ask for any lessers, and the court decided just to give it, and then we would be in that position. And I believe that there are many jurisdictions that follow the party.
Basically, you're arguing that if we were to affirm, then that would open the door to gaming the system.
I believe so, yes.
Is there anything further?
No.
What if the trial judge does think that defense counsel is ineffective and not asking for a lesser.
I believe, having been in a few prayer conferences, that the very approach that Your Honor had discussed with Mr. Haley is appropriate. And that is, I do believe that the prayer conference should be an open discussion about the various legal options, and including the trial judge recommending or suggesting. Isn't criminally negligent homicide a possible lesser included in this? Don't you think that that's an appropriate one, defense counsel? But in the end, that the decision does have to be the defendant's. And, in fact, there's no reason to believe that that didn't occur here. And the Iowa Supreme Court and the Wallace case talks about the fact that these decisions come about by discussion and trial strategy, and we know what the trial strategy was the entire time. I'm going after state of mind. I wasn't a drag racer, so I have no criminal liability. That's a fair strategy, and that's a well-thought-out strategy. It just didn't happen to work for him. And so to try to set aside lessers was a strategic choice. And I suggest that the option then is exactly what Your Honor had discussed, and that is the trial judge being part and an active part of the prayer conference in explaining what some of the options are. And certainly different trial judges take different tacks in that. I've seen both.
The bottom line is that the judge always has discretion to, if the judge perceives that there's an imbalance in the quality of the representation or that some, you know, ridiculous mistake may be about to be made, to persuade one or more of the lawyers to request an instruction. But if that persuasion doesn't work, then the judge has to honor, that is, has no discretion to dishonor.
I believe that's true, yes.
Unless the judge is prepared to find that there's inadequate representation right there.
Right.
In that case, you would agree that the rule would not apply. That is, the party autonomy rule.
I believe that there has to be more discussion, because if the defendant, there may be a colloquy with the defendant then to explain, do you understand what's going on? There are other options before the force of giving it. And honestly, in my practice, trial judges do a very good job of seeing that imbalance, discussing that imbalance, suggesting, trying to cure as it goes along. But in this particular area, when push comes to shove, when it gets to that point, I don't believe that the court can override, even if it believes differently, I don't believe that the court can override a knowing decision such as this one.
The remedy is under Rule 61, if there is one then.
Yes. And in which case, he has to overcome that it was sound trial strategy. And it may well be. Defense attorneys don't all have to agree on sound trial strategy, and again, and this is a good case to look at that. It was a sound strategy. It simply did not work, and that doesn't get Rule 61. But I do believe that the court should play an active role, and I do. My practice has been that judges do a very good job of that in noticing those imbalances and trying to cure them when they come about. If there's nothing further from the court, thank you.
Thank you. The court will take this matter under advisement and will take a brief recess.